This is BBC. BBC Radio. Music. Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Perry Farrell.
I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to The First Time. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. This week we meet the frontman of a Los Angeles band that drove forward the alternative guitar scene of the late 80s and 90s. They fused glam, goth, funk, jazz and punk and everything else that fitted into their genre-bending style. This group have been cited as an influence by Rage Against the Machine, Smashing Pumpkins, Tool, System of a Down, and many, many others. And my guests, soaring voice and extraordinary live performances, have been front and centre of that band's output for over 30 years. As he displays in the next hour, he's an enchanting, otherworldly, unique and mischievous soul. My guest on The First Time this week is from Jane's Addiction, it's Perry Farrell. As well as achieving huge success with Jane's Addiction, Perry has branched into side projects such as Porno for Pyros and released a steady stream of solo records, most recently the multi-dimensional album Kind Heaven. He also found time to set up the US music festival Lollapalooza, now a mainstay on the global festival circuit. Here we talk about his early life in New York, the musical community and inspiration he found in 80s LA, and how he dealt with the much-reported excesses that his lifestyle bred. But the first question I asked Perry, as I do with all my guests, was when was the first time he was aware of music?
I have a big brother and a big sister, older brother, older sister, that are 10 years older, my sister, and 12 years older, my brother. So when I was a little boy, even before I could speak, my big brother and big sister... I was born in 1959, so 1961, 62, the British invasion happened, and my big brother and big sister were listening to the Beatles and the Stones, and a woman by the name of Millie Small, who is the first ever reggae artist, she did a song called My Boy Lollipop.
Yes.
That was Island Records, and that was my favorite song when I was a little boy.
You made my heart go giddy up. You are a sweet ass cat.
along with the Beatles and the Stones and everything that was going on radio. 77 WABC in New York. Murray the K was the radio jock. And my family, we would play 45s on the porch. We lived in Queens, Flushing, Queens, in New York. And my brother loved music. He went into rock and roll and became friends and actually roomed with Jimi Hendrix.
What?
Yeah, and my family, my dad was a jewelry designer.
Yeah.
And so my brother designed jewelry for the likes of Keith Richards and Elton John and John Lennon.
Because I read the Concert for Bangladesh album was big for you. And I thought,
yes,
because that record, looking at what you ended up creating, that blend of many different musicians, many different philosophies, many different styles of music and different Eastern and Western, that I almost saw a lineage from the Concert for Bangladesh to what you ended up doing.
Oh, gosh. A couple of numbers from Leon. I remember that was one of my favorite parts because I loved Leon Russell.
Yeah.
And I loved, I loved that whole concert. I just, you know, we would listen to it as a kid. I would get dressed to that record and the White Album. And also the idea and the aspects of doing a charity concert was something that stuck with me.
It was all there from the start.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Okay, what about, can you remember going out and buying music yourself for the first time, something that was yours?
I did.
What was that?
My first records were Sly and the Family Stone.
Good start.
James Brown.
Also good.
Yeah, and Little Richard.
What appealed to you about those guys, do you think?
My sister loved soul music, R&B, and funk. So I got that side from my sister and the rock side from my brother. He was giving me records, you know, like The Doors and Black Sabbath and Jimi Hendrix. And then my sister would give me James Brown and Little Richard, as I say. And my favorite was Sly and the Family Stone, because that was the beautiful combination of rock and funk and love and soul.
And politics.
And politics and being daring and writing and being provocative. But also having style with a smile. Can I also add in women, empowering women? And, you know, he's got his sister, I think her name was Rose, playing trumpet. And so you can hear her voice just belting it away when he was starting to lose his due to, I don't know, singing too much, something like that.
When was the first time that you thought you could be a performer? That you thought, this is a world I can inhabit?
Well, I started to perform early on, very, very early as a young boy, even before I could string sentences together. I had songs.
Really?
Like Alabooney, 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 Booney, Booney, Rats and Nudie, Nudie, Nudie. That was my first song.
That's a good track.
And I would perform that for my big brother and my big sister and their friends at their makeout parties.
First band. Because that's a different thing. Then all of a sudden you have...
Oh, yeah.
Your gang. Who was it? What were they like?
Well, we were called SciComm. And we started in 1982. We were a post-punk / goth. I auditioned for them. So what I would do is I would look in the LA Weekly or the back of the Music Connection. These were free trades that circulated in Los Angeles. I was living there. I'd moved up from Newport Beach, and I moved up from there from Cardiff by the Sea. I'd moved up from there from Hemet, California, which is the high deserts. Anyway, there I was.
You're a nomad already.
Oh, yeah. I was traveling on my 18th birthday. I left home, and I never looked back. And so I ended up 2.5 years later in Los Angeles, and I had a bit of experience as an entertainer, having done impersonations of David Bowie and Mick Jagger and Frank Sinatra.
What's your Bowie impersonation like?
Oh, it was really good. I had people waiting for me after wanting autographs, which I never quite understood. Isn't that weird? I'm signing, but I signed my own name, but I didn't understand. Maybe they were trying to get next to me. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah,
possibly. Yeah. So my first band was these, they were like the intelligentsia art crew. Rich Evac, he was the leader, the band leader. He played bass, and he was also a graphic artist like myself, and into, you know, J.G. Ballard and Joy Division. And he basically introduced me to the world of punk rock, but it was more than punk. We were artists, you know, precursor to the hipsters. We weren't hipsters yet because there was no such thing as a hipster.
That LA scene, I mean, you've got people like Minutemen, you've got some, it's a really,
yeah.
It seems like being a really potent world at that time.
Yeah, but they were, you know, revolutionaries, and we would put on our own shows. We would take it out to the desert, man, and bring people like Red Cross and Sonic Youth and the Minutemen and Eisersen de Neubauten.
Wow.
And the Meat Puppets. And we went out to the desert, put on our own shows, loaded people up on buses. It was the best time. It was a great time to be learning about all those people and all those books and all that music. That set my course. It kept me honest. Every time that I would think we're going off into the commercial waters of pop culture, and I think to myself, no, we've got to keep it interesting. Introduce, you know, we've got the power. Introduce the real deal. You know, introduce these artists, introduce these musicians, introduce the culture.
People will survive.
Can you remember the first Jane's concert? What was it like?
Yeah, so it was just myself and Eric Avery, and we were performing on this person's ranch. They had a, like a ranch out on the outskirts of LA, and it was somebody's birthday. And I went out there with Eric, and he just was performing, just driving riffs. And then I brought my delay unit. And so I would sing, and I would do lots of oohs and ahs, you know, over him. And then dropping poetry, I would drop poetry as well. And then I would create live loops. And I was developing my technique that I do today, which is live looping.
Because, I mean, obviously there's a lot to cover here, but that first Jane's album, I mean, the legend is it was recorded in one day. Is that true? That can't be true.
The Jane's Addiction recording was done at the Roxy in one day, in one night.
That's phenomenal.
The mythology behind it is we were newly signed by Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And I did not want to stray from, I wanted to keep it beautiful and fine art, if you will. And so I told Warner Brothers I would give them their whatever, 7 records or 5 records or whatever they wanted. But first, I wanted to do one recording, and I wanted this record company, Triple X, who were friends of ours and they were also managing us. I wanted them to have a chance to do a live recording because I wanted the world to know what we sounded like, the energy that was Jane's Addiction back then, which was, I believe, 1984.
So I remember seeing you early on, and there'd always be, talking a lot about mythology, this idea of whether you'd do Jane Says. And, well, were they going to play it? No, they're probably, he doesn't like doing it. Maybe he's going to play it.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was a beautiful, because you don't really get that anymore, because everyone knows what a band played the previous night or the night before.
Right.
Whereas information was a lot sparser about you guys.
Yeah.
So,
and the truth was that I didn't like to sing it all the time.
Yeah.
Because I was, in those days, you know, you have to understand, a much more immature person. I'm finally, like, at 60, feeling comfortable to speak to people, honestly. And so that's why we haven't spoken more often, you know, really.
Yeah.
But back in those days, I looked at it like, you know, that song is, I want to keep it rare. It should be on a special occasion that I do it, you know.
Exactly.
My record company didn't quite understand the theory behind it, you know. But do you understand it?
Yeah.
As a young man, I thought to myself, and then when we do play it, it will be a very, very special thing. So now I have it for this other song, I Would For You.
Okay.
I still have a song that people really want me to perform that I don't, and it's called I Would For You.
But I love that because it means it's not obvious. It becomes...
And Obvious is another one.
Oh, yeah.
I love that song, Obvious, and I perform that song rarely.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
Matt Everett's The First Time.
Here we go!
Seem to enjoy playing around with your own mythology as well. It's not about spreading falsehoods, but like in interviews you can set little stories that maybe aren't completely accurate, and it seemed to be you quite enjoyed doing that. And as a fan, it was kind of interesting to hear what's the latest legend or myth about the band.
Well, you know, I have one going with Howard Stern. I told him that I see aliens. He goes, "You do? How often?" I go, "Every day, all the time." And you go, and I go, "They love you, Howard." So that's when it like, "Oh, really? They do?"
Moving on to Ritual, The Low Habitual. One of the things I love about that record is the sequencing. It kind of, most records build and flow in different paces. That record comes out for your throat and then slowly moves into
evening.
Into evening. Oh, is that how you think about
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's what it is.
But that was a very intentional, we want 3 days in the middle as the centerpiece, and then it's going to take you down.
Yes.
Records don't normally fall like that.
Yeah, because I remember listening to, like, you know, I don't know, the Velvet Underground, and it might be like Saturday night, then you wake up and it's Sunday morning. So that's how I liked the idea of you're playing the record, and the record can stick with you over the course of a day or two or 3 days.
Or 3 days?
Yeah.
How did you get on with becoming, because in the wake of that album and the success that followed, it's very difficult not to become a commodity. You know, there's a big machine behind you now. And you don't strike me as a person who was naturally comfortable being a conventionally directed musician.
No.
Did you kick hard against it?
You know, I was kind of smart. I understood my own emotions and what I could handle and what I was comfortable with, and also what I wanted to accomplish. And after 35 years, people know who I am now.
3 days was the morning. My focus, 3 days was. My head landed.
That was 3 days, the bridging track from Jane's Addiction's classic 1990 album, Ritual de lo Habitual.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music. Now on BBC Sounds. 6 Music. I'm Matt Everett, and this is The First Time on 6 Music, where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is, from Jane's Addiction, Perry Farrell. And that was Just Because, a single from the band's 2003 album Strays, a record my guest on The First Time described as fast, hard, modern, and to the point. It's very difficult to look at part of your history without looking at how close you came to, seemingly came to self-destruction in terms of your drug use. And I guess I want to know how you escaped that, because lots of people don't. Lots of people don't make it out the other side.
Right.
How did you get out, if you don't mind me asking you?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I wish I could tell you something that makes me look like some tall hero, but the honest truth is I just kind of ran out of time. So I'm 60 years old now, and I have to come to my senses. It's really just that. It's that simple. I ran out of time. My body won't allow me to do both. So I choose life. It's very simple. I'm not as strong and amazing as you are making me out to be. And so I want to be gorgeous when I meet people.
And you are.
Thank you.
And you are.
Love, peace, unity are manifestations of those who are wise. Youth must rise up forward.
Sister Mary.
New beginnings.
Rastafari.
Let's start again. Never come to whitewash the shame that you gained. Never want the wicked don't forsake up a claim on your spirit, cause you see. Rasta all about life and liberty. And I burn up on this mentality, cause it's all about the love that we forgot to show each other in the past. Move to the future, cause new beginning have begun. If we want to move forward in the future, there must be unity. But I don't know where the unity's gone. Consciousness gone wrong in the Gideon dawn.
Rastafari.
New beginnings. Too much of the youth, them blood is spilling. Instead of killing, the soil I will be tilling. I just strictly love I'll be giving. No more hatred, cause life is just for living. All my trespasses will be forgiven. This is for my fallen fighters now who are missing. So much trouble in the world. Jah protect the boys and the girls.
Vibon, you have no place now. Come and face the liar, make you scared. Cause I'm sick of your fuss and fanfare. I'll detonate your heart with the teaching that I will keep us apart. Never knew that your heart was bought. When mine is lost, even when you think I fall, I am for not. Don't smoke your rocks. Cause new beginning, have begun. If we want to move forward in the future, there must be unity. But I don't know where the unity's gone. Consciousness gone wrong in the Gideon dawn. Cause new beginning has begun. But I don't know where the unity's gone.
Let's talk about another artist. Let's talk about Congo Natty.
Okay.
Who's someone that you, post-James, you kind of immersed yourself in electronic music, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
What was it about that world that you found so appealing at the time? Was it like, I need to move away from the kind of guitar world, I need to push myself somewhere else?
Well, you know, if you listen to Kind Heaven Orchestra, it's got dub in there. When I was listening to Adrian Sherwood back in those days, and Sisters of Mercy and The Cure and Joy Division and Susie and the Banshees and the Cocteau Twins. Mm-hmm. I loved the British slant on the Jamaican slant of Lee Scratch Perry and Mad Professor and all those guys that created dub. But anyway, I never lost that love of dub, and I never lost that love of rock. Mm. And I love orchestra. And, you know, Stravinsky. And I love The Orb. Alex Patterson.
Genius.
So, genius.
Yeah.
So what I am is I'm a child of the millennium, really. I love to utilize the best of what I've heard and loved in my lifetime.
Because, yeah, so the Kind Heaven project, I mean, it seems to be so multi-elemental. There's like this sort of mythology. There's a story kind of that you've written or are focused upon.
Yes.
But there's... then there's like... there's a touring version, there's a kind of orchestral element to it, there's a physical Vegas element. Can you... how would you explain this? Because it's vast, isn't
it? Okay. Well, it is complex. That's why I titled what we're doing out in Las Vegas an immersive entertainment complex.
Okay.
So the music was recorded with Tony Visconti. We mixed it three ways in stereo. We mixed it binaurally, which means new way of doing headphones where it's surround sound headphone. And then last, we mixed it Atmos 7.2 surround sound, the type of mixing that when they're mixing movies, they mix in the round, surround sound. So there's speaker arrays that are above your head. Sometimes it might even be on the seats. Mm. So you get this incredible immersive experience in sound. We've mixed our album. It's the first album in history to be mixed in surround. And then when you go to Las Vegas, July next year, the walls, the ceiling.
Pirate Punk Politician is one of the tracks we've heard. And as a musician who's toured around the world, so you have an understanding of different mindsets of different countries, and as an American who is, you know, obviously has toured America a lot and understands a lot about the different psychologies behind American political thought. What do you feel like when you survey the political landscape at the moment? Do you feel hope or do you feel despair?
I had a mechanic that used to work on my car all the time, and I would ask, when my car would mess up, malfunction, I would go to Carl and I'd say, "Carl, what seems to be wrong with my car?" And he would say, "Well, Perry, it's a combination problem." So when I'm surveying the political landscape, I'm letting you know, Matt Everett, it's a combination problem. The world's consciousness has, we are more and more conscious. So if you lie to people, they're awake. They hear what you say and they don't believe you. They don't agree with you. So, you know, if you want to get on in this world with us, you're going to have to behave yourself.
Yeah.
Because back in 2007, you met our then Prime Minister. You met Tony Blair.
Yes, I did.
I didn't know about this. How was...
He invited us to 10 Downing Street to speak about global warming. And I was there with Brian May and Roger Taylor and my wife. And he put out the soapbox. Literally, it was a wood soapbox. This guy wearing a powdered wig and knickers. And he pointed to it, told me to get up on it in the living room. And I got up there and I riffed. I was like rapping all about global warming. To Tony Blair. And then I gave him, I also happen to have with me an unreleased song by Jim Morrison, a poem by Jim Morrison where he's singing. And I composed and arranged and produced this song. It's called Woman in the Window. I gave him a version of that on a CD.
So Tony Blair's got like...
Yes, he does.
He's got an unreleased...
Yes.
Doors Barry Farrell track.
Yeah. I was trying to impress him, like, you know, work with us, man.
I am the woman in the window. See the children playing. Soldier, sailor, young man, on your way to the summer swimming pool. Can you see me stand? In my window, can you hear me laughing? Come upstairs, sir, to your room, and I will play for you.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
Matt Everett's The First Time.
Superhero, or even if I tumble fall. Superhero, fall from a running horse.
final James question. I mean, how was the experience of Strays? Because people really love that record.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah, it's a great record. Bob Ezrin produced it.
I know, Bob.
Bob Ezrin produced The Wall, also Berlin, also Kiss's great works. If you think Kiss is great, he produced it.
But yeah, the idea of a band is a very alchemical thing. It's very individual push and pull of dynamic and musicality. And sometimes when you push those people back together again, you can capture that thing.
Yeah.
Other times you can't.
Uh-huh.
Does that, there's always a risk involved with bringing people, a group together, especially a group like Jane's.
So what do you want to know?
How was that experience and would you do it again? Is what I want to know.
Would I work with Jane's again?
Yeah.
I would wish that Jane's comes together in the next few months.
Really?
Yeah, and what we're going to be is we're going to be the Kind Heaven Orchestra with Jane's Addiction.
Cool!
Yeah, so I'm not going to lose this. Like I told you, I've got 10 years to work on this. The arc is a 10-year arc. But my brothers from Jane's, I'm always looking for times when we can get together.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice thing to hear.
Yeah.
And the last question, what's the last song that we should play? You may pick anything you
right
want.
Now, do this song called More Than I Could Bear. It's a song that is reminiscent. It's very Jamesy, but Elliot Easton is performing, playing guitar, as Mike Garson, who performed with David Bowie.
You got Garson.
Yeah, on Aladdin Sane. And then it's us with them. I mean, you know, a couple of Jane's guys performing with him. It's about speaking to an angel who has committed suicide.
Then that's the song we should play. It's been good to speak to you.
Thank you.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
There's a smart young woman on a light blue screen who comes into my house every night. She takes all the red, yellow, orange and green and she turns them into black and white. But you tease, you flirt, and you shine all the buttons on your green shirt. You can please yourself, but somebody's gonna get it. Better cut off all identifying labels before they put you on the torture table. Cause somewhere in the Quisling Clinic there's a shorthand type who's taking seconds over minutes. She's listening into the Venus line. She's picking out names. I hope none of them are mine. But you tease, you flirt, and you shine all the buttons on your green shirt. You can please yourself, but somebody's gonna get it. Never said it was a school pitch. I never said it was a diplomat. Everybody is under suspicion, but you don't wanna hear about that. Cause you tease, you flirt, and you shine all the buttons on your green shirt. You can please yourself, but somebody's gonna get it. Better send a begging letter to the big investigation. Who put these fingerprints on my imagination? On your green shirt, you can please yourself, but somebody's gonna get it. You can please yourself, but somebody's gonna get it. You can please yourself, but somebody's gonna get it.
Is a repeat.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
Two Stevens here, it's the Six Music Jukebox. And well, next, this is by Mos Def from 2009. This is Quiet Dog.
To the bang, to the boogie, so the boogie, to the rhythm of the boogie, the beat. To the rhythm of the boogie, the beat. There go like simple and plain, it's primarily basic Zulu arrangement, rocking amazement. Flocko, radiant from heaven to pavement. If only is a facelift, nothing to play with. Spend time hating it, but that ain't changing it. God give it to me, nobody is taking it. Therefore, moving on the base of stimulus. Standing in the twilight, I'm watching you get it in. The walls trembling, the air simmering. She moving like more than the ears of listening. Won't now test to your equilibrium. Sonic wave booming all over your intimate. Skin on skin and skin on skin again. Put it on, get it off, get on, get.